This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start today with two federal ethics reports alleging that U.S. Attorney for Massachusetts Rachel Rollins committed multiple violations of federal ethics law. Rollins has said she'll submit her resignation to the Biden administration by end of day Friday. Here to tell us more, WBUR senior correspondent Deborah Becker. Deb, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So we're going to start with all things legal on this, Deb. The reports came from the Justice Department Inspector General and the U.S. Office of Special Counsel, and they allege a range of ethics violations. At the top of that list seems to be her actions regarding the Suffolk County District Attorney's race last year. So let's start there. Who were the candidates in that race, and why was it so contentious?
The Suffolk DA's race was for the seat that Rollins held before she was appointed U.S. attorney. So when she was appointed, then Governor Baker chose Kevin Hayden to fill the rest of Rollins' term as DA. So then the post was up for election last November. Hayden ran against Boston City Councilor Ricardo Arroyo. Now, Arroyo had promised to follow many of the policies that Rollins implemented while she was DA. And the race really was considered a referendum on what Rollins did as a progressive prosecutor. Hayden, of course, won that election and is the current DA for Suffolk County.
So the report finds that Rollins acted in favor of Arroyo in that race. What do they say that she did?
It's really damning, Tiziana. The reports say that Rollins was Arroyo's de facto campaign advisor. For example, in the 2 months leading up to last year's primary election, the investigators found that Rollins exchanged almost 400 messages with Arroyo. And the investigation focused on how Rollins tried to leak sensitive information from the U.S. Attorney's Office to the media to make it appear as if there was a federal investigation of Hayden. The reports say that at first Rollins denied that she was the source of that leak to the media, but then admitted her involvement after text messages confirmed it.
So that denial was another piece of the findings. There were a few others outside the Suffolk County DA's race as well, Deb. So walk us through some of those other findings in the reports.
Yeah. So other things that are mentioned, the reports cite Rollins attending a Democratic fundraising event in Andover last year featuring First Lady Jill Biden. And the report said Rollins was told not to attend and go inside the event, but she did anyway. Another instance of Rollins being actively involved in politics, which U.S. attorneys are expressly trained not to do. The investigators also found that Rollins solicited Boston Celtics tickets for a local youth sports program and some tickets for herself. And they also say she had some unauthorized travel expenses.
So tell us about Rollins's response to the reports.
Yeah. Her attorney, Michael Bromwich, released a statement yesterday after these reports came out and said basically these alleged violations need to be put into context. He said Rollins moved from being an elected official with almost no restrictions on her activities to a highly regulated environment in the U.S. Attorney's Office. He called most of the alleged violations minor process fouls, and he says she could have litigated, but she thought the better action for her was to step down before it overwhelmed the office. And we should say on Tuesday, the day before these reports came out, Rollins announced that she was submitting her resignation to the president by the end of the day tomorrow so as not to be a distraction to the office.
So she announces that Tuesday, Deb. The reports come out Wednesday. The resignation not until Friday. Is there any particular reason for that delay?
No particular reason. I think it's, certainly not outlined. I think she just announced that she would be giving some time for her departure and submitting the letter of resignation to the White House.
And do we know who will replace her?
It's expected that her first assistant, Joshua Levy, will take over, at least in the short term, and will likely remain interim U.S. attorney for Massachusetts until the president makes another appointment. And that would, again, require U.S. Senate confirmation.
All right, Deb, that's the rundown on the reports. Thank you for that. We are going to come back to you a little later in the show to talk about how the reports are reverberating here in the area. So please stand by. For now, I want to take some time to understand the legal implications of what's in these reports with a couple of legal experts. Renee Landers is a law professor at Suffolk University, and she served in the Justice Department during the Clinton administration. George Brown is a law professor emeritus at Boston College. He's formerly the chair of the Massachusetts State Ethics Commission. Professor Landers, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Tiziana.
And Professor Brown, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So how significant are the findings here overall, Professor Brown?
Well, I think they're quite damaging, both in the short term and in the long term, to Ms. Rollins. And the fact that you have two somewhat separate agencies, even though they're both located in the Justice Department, the fact that you have two agencies coming up with essentially the same conclusions and finding the same facts, I think considerably strengthens the case against Ms. Rollins.
And Renee Landers, in looking at these two reports, was there anything that really particularly stood out to you, especially as someone who has experience in the Department of Justice?
So one thing I would point out is that Ms. Rollins formerly served as an assistant U.S. attorney in the Massachusetts office, so had some familiarity with what the rules were that applied to people who work in that office. Second, I think that the most concerning aspect of, there are two concerning aspects of what has happened here. One is that the allegations about using the office to influence a political campaign, with the suggestion or the inference that could be drawn that prosecutions might be based on, aimed at political enemies, I think is a particularly concerning aspect of this. And the Justice Department tries very hard to try to avoid that characterization, because it's very important for people to believe that the prosecutions are based on the law and not, any kind of political, having any kind of political valence. And then the second thing that I think is a real tragic result of what's happened here is the, I think that Ms. Rollins has done a lot to reform our views about what makes for effective law enforcement when she was district attorney in Boston, and that she perhaps would bring that same kind of attitude and approach to her role as the United States attorney. And what I hope does not happen here is that those efforts are discredited, because the facts, their studies show that the process, that what she was doing in Boston seemed to be working. Obviously, she just wasn't U.S. attorney long enough to see if any of the changes she might have made would have a similar effect.
So, and I will note for listeners, we had Rachel Rollins on when she was district attorney, looking at research that had been done by an academic institution on the impact of the measure she was taking as DA. She was known as part of a class of progressive district attorneys. And in fact, that reputation was part of what some Republican senators cited in opposing her nomination as U.S. attorney for Massachusetts, a nomination that was hotly contested. And the vote was tiebroken twice by Vice President Kamala Harris, for some broader context. So I'll turn back to you, George Brown, emeritus at Boston College. One of the things that struck me was the line from the Office of Special Counsel report in the first paragraph. It says, quote, "one of the most egregious Hatch Act violations that the office has investigated," end quote. We'll get to Hatch Act in a second, but there were a number of other findings in the reports. It does feel like those associated with the political campaign for Suffolk County District Attorney were categorically different as a layperson. Is that correct, or is that legally not the case? Do you understand my question?
I do, and I think it is correct. I think one reads both reports, what comes across is a sense of outrage that someone as high as a U.S. attorney could engage in this kind of pretty basic, you know, Tammany Hall kind of politics. And it's a fluke that you have two agencies in the same overall department reaching quite similar conclusions, making quite similar findings of fact. And as I said earlier, that, if anything, strengthens it. And I think what we need to do is kind of move on a little bit and look at what happens now. Will President Biden in fact appoint somebody? That could very easily turn into a sort of Kavanaugh-style hearing.
Referencing Brett Kavanaugh when he was nominated to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yes, that was for a justice of the court, not a U.S. attorney. But it would be a great chance for the Republicans to put on the table the issue of progressive prosecution, which Professor Landers mentioned. Most of the examples, if not all of them, have been local prosecutors, Gascon and Boudin in California, for example, Bragg in New York. And here you would have an appointee for a national, for a federal office, at the center of a debate, or becoming the center of a debate, over progressive prosecution at the national level.
So what's interesting there then is underscoring that the reverberations here for prosecutorial reform, that's being a phrase that's used out there, and for looking at progressive prosecutor attitudes, moves from local to national if the Biden administration seeks another appointment during this term. Is that right, George Brown?
That is right. And there may be a temptation on the part of the Biden administration to leave it alone, let it die down. Mr. Levy is probably doing a good job, and just keep him there and wait sort of for the next crisis to come along, because this is one where I think the Democrats are politically weak. It's the whole soft on crime issue. And I would think that the Biden administration would rather have national debates on something else.
We're talking to two law professors, George Brown, an emeritus at Boston College, and Renee Landers at Suffolk University, about the legal findings and implications of the two reports that have just come out regarding ethics law violations of U.S. Attorney Rachel Rollins. I'll turn back to you now, Renee Landers from Suffolk University. I want to do the 10-second thing on the Hatch Act, because it comes up a lot. More people are probably aware of it post-2016, because many members of the Trump administration over the years were accused of its violation. There are a lot of questions about, is it enforced? Is it not enforced? When it is enforced, is it considered a big deal to violate the Hatch Act? Not a big deal to violate the Hatch Act. So briefly, what is it, and is it often violated?
So the Hatch Act prohibits federal employees generally from using their federal offices to participate in partisan political activities. And so, you know, attendance at fundraisers, using the office, you know, sort of by the insinuation in this context, the insinuation that there was an ongoing investigation into one of the candidates for DA, those activities could arguably be Hatch Act violations. Is it violated often? Well, you know, always these things are matters of degree. I would say, yes, you know, as with every law on the books, there are probably myriad violations that go undetected and unprosecuted. I think the other larger context about what is going on here is that, you know, I'm going to connect the dots with another big story on potential ethics violations, which is what's going on with the Supreme Court, which has not agreed to subject itself to any meaningful and binding ethical regulations. And we have at least one justice and probably others, you know, who have engaged in activities that are not particularly admirable, who are accused of, you know, taking, credibly accused of taking large, large gifts from very influential Republican conservative advocates. And so I think that the larger context is here is that the Democrats would very much like to do something about that problem with the Supreme Court. And you cannot overlook these kinds of violations in your own backyard if you want to do something credibly about, with integrity, about that other problem, which I would argue in some ways is worse because of the lack of accountability that the Supreme Court has right now. Here we see that that there were mechanisms in place to hold the U.S. attorney accountable for her actions. And that has resulted in her decision to resign.
I do need to ask one last question here. I'll turn to you, George Brown. Briefly, could the U.S. attorney face disbarment or criminal charges here?
Well, it's interesting. A criminal charge was contemplated by the Office of Inspector General, and they referred it to Maine Justice. And the Justice Department, for reasons totally unknown, refused to prosecute for making false statements to federal investigators, which is a pretty clearly understood crime, and certainly Ms. Rollins would have understood it well. And somehow in the machinations of the Biden Justice Department, that one got lost. So it appears the other report focuses on standards of conduct, which do not have a criminal-like penalty. So disbarment does remain as a possibility. I think to some it would look vindictive, and others would say it was justly deserved.
All right. This has been Professors George Brown of Boston College and Renee Landers of Suffolk University. Really appreciate the analysis. I know it was a lot to consume. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Turning back now to WBUR senior correspondent Deb Becker. Thanks for staying with us, Deb. I want to talk a little bit about reverberations here. Already this morning, Boston Herald columnist Joe Battenfeld targeting Senators Ed Markey and Elizabeth Warren for backing Rachel Rollins when she was nominated for U.S. attorney. Any reactions yet from those who have supported Rollins over the years?
Well, Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley also issued a statement calling Rollins a friend and said she respects the ethics process. And I think most of the folks I spoke with were surprised at how broad these reports went. At first, many believed Rollins would be cited for attending a political event in Andover last year where the First Lady was in attendance. But this report outlines really active engagement in local politics and not being truthful about it. Attorney and civil libertarian Harvey Silverglate said he was really saddened by this and what it does to that progressive prosecutor movement that your guests were just talking about. This is what he said. Let's listen.
To me, it is particularly depressing because she was a pioneer in the move to have fewer people in prison. She was at the forefront. She actually had power that she exercised in a benevolent way. And she thought she was in Suffolk County when in fact she was in the United States of America. And it's very depressing. I'll repeat that. Very upsetting.
And I think that's what many people feel, that they are disappointed. But there are some who say that these alleged violations show that she did not take her responsibility seriously and maybe didn't have the temperament for the job.
So, Deb, I'll briefly turn now to the two former candidates in the Suffolk County DA's race. You talked about, you know, the more than 400 text exchanges between Ricardo Arroyo, who's a Boston City councilor, and Rachel Rollins. First, what has Arroyo said in response to the reports?
Well, he issued a statement saying that Rachel is a friend. Rachel Rollins is a friend of his, and she did he did seek her advice. He called the entire matter sad and unfortunate. Said he wasn't aware of these investigations. Denied any wrongdoing on his part, and he said his focus remains on his work as a Boston City Councilor.
And by the way, I'll direct our listeners to yours and Walter Wuthman's reporting at WBUR.org, which spells a lot of this out in a lot more detail. What about District Attorney Kevin Hayden? Any comments?
Hayden's office issued a statement yesterday after these reports were released, saying that the reports present a comprehensive review of the conduct of one individual. And also, the office wanted to emphasize that it still has a strong relationship with the Office of the U.S. Attorney in Massachusetts.
At this point, Devin, what we're just about 24 hours since the reports were released, has any local body announced any interest or intention to further investigate anything having to do with that DA's race last year?
Not at this point, no.
Okay, and what are you watching for next now?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what kind of repercussions Rachel Rollins may face because of this. Will someone file a complaint seeking disbarment? Unclear at this point. And there are some who still believe there may be criminal charges forthcoming, even though it did say that the Justice Department, the report said, and I think your last guest also pointed this out, that the Justice Department has declined to prosecute for not making truthful statements under oath. So it'll be interesting to see where Rachel Rollins lands next and how she gets there and what the consequences of this might be for her.
All right, WBUR's Deborah Becker, senior correspondent, thanks so much for spending the time.
You're welcome.